Welcome to Hidden Layers, where we explore the people and the technology behind artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Ron Green. Joining me today is my co-founder and head of innovation, Steve Meyer. When we started Kung Fu AI over 6 years ago, there were lots of things we didn't anticipate. Some of the things we got right and some of the things we got wrong. Steve and I are going to talk about those today and hoping that sharing our experiences will help others navigate the exciting but fast-moving landscape of artificial intelligence. Hey, Steve, thanks for joining me.
I'm excited to be here.
All right, let's just jump right in. We'll talk about some things we got right, some things we got wrong. Let's start on the positive. What's something that you think we got right 6 years ago?
Starting on a high note, love that. What did we get right? Well, I wouldn't say we totally got this right, but there's this thing called the last mile AI problem that we saw early days. We're still seeing it today. And I don't know if we totally stuck the landing, but we made some good decisions early days. And I think when it comes to the first mile AI problem, and just to back up, this is the issue of getting from POC to production,
Okay. Demo
to something usable. And I'm hearing from folks even today that they're stuck with hundreds. I just heard 1,000 POCs not getting to production, which is wild, but it just illustrates the issue that there are two things that I think are critical ingredients to that. One, I think we got right. One that we didn't totally anticipate. The one that I feel like we did a great job on, and kudos to you, sir, is the idea of the machine learning engineer. So very early days, we had a co-founder that was a data scientist. They're no longer here, but when you came aboard, you made a very good decision on helping us focus on machine learning engineers, which is a different skill set than data scientists altogether. I didn't totally appreciate the difference, but I certainly do now. But in terms of being able to take a machine learning project and get it beyond a demo and taking that algorithm to production in a way that gets to scale is really, really hard and sometimes could be the hardest part of the problem. I'm just curious, what inspired that decision on your end, and how do you couch the difference between, let's say, data scientist?
I think it's a big world, and I think there are a lot of data scientists out there that will probably be even able to fit the description I'm about to describe, or the differences. But the distinction that the way I think about it is the machine learning engineer title has that engineer in it. Simply because the idea is that you're going to be focused on building solutions that go into production, and it's less about maybe analysis and understanding. It's more about sort of a production focus. There's an old joke in software. It's called the 90-90 rule. It's that the first 90% of code takes about 90% of the development time, and that last 10% of code takes about the other 90% of development time. And the reason is that there's a giant gap between something that works in a prototype and getting something in production. And the main differences are all of the weird corner cases that have to work in production have to be ironed out. Every little edge case, and that can take so much time. And so you're often in a situation where you're getting constantly surprised. You've got deliverable requirements are changing. You've got the market itself is changing. You've got the technology stack changing. And so one of the things that we knew from the get-go. One of the things I think we got right was we wanted to focus on hiring people to build AI production systems where they cared about good professional software development practices as much as they did about building AI systems. And the reason that's so important is that some of the key aspects of good software engineering and development are caring about things like design. Caring about reliability, caring about scalability. And the reason those things are important is that the one thing you can guarantee is going to happen is things are going to change. And well-designed software can accommodate change much more easily. So I think that, I guess to kind of maybe wrap up my thought here, I do think that if you're building production-grade AI systems, having people on the team that really care about software is a critical component.
And they're both so important, right? The data scientist has such an important role and the machine learning engineer has such an important role. I just feel that the market that we serve knows the data scientist well from years and decades of experience. The machine learning engineer concept is just so new. But I will say that that's maybe half or 60% of the puzzle. There's another missing ingredient that I think that we didn't totally appreciate, and it's the business requirement alignment. I'd say, let's say theoretically we have 500 POCs pending production, right? I'd maybe argue that 300 of them should have never been started in the first place. Why? Because they weren't totally solving a real business problem that was urgent, that had a measurable return value on it. So it wasn't aligned. The business never would have accepted it in the first place. Users never would have embraced it if it made it to production. So a lot of things stall out because the business wasn't involved, and having business alignment and having an executive sponsor involved. And if that's not possible, having a product manager involved from the jump to think about some of those changing in market dynamics and what's the metric of success and how do we know this is proving value and is it aligned to our strategy becomes such an important ingredient, because that level of good enough then directs the engineering effort.
Right.
That's when you know what the trade-offs need to be where you need to stop.
And your comment on having product and product management involved is really huge, because I've seen this so many times where if you build something in isolation and then you take it to the product management team, or then you take it to the DevOps teams, you completely blindside them. It's not like they can just integrate that either into the existing infrastructure or into the roadmap. You've got to have buy-in from the get-go, and that buy-in has to happen while you are even thinking about what you will be building and prototyping, not at the end.
So true.
Okay, so all right, let's segue to something that I think we got wrong, or maybe something we didn't anticipate.
Yeah.
I would put the explosion in generative AI there. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh my gosh, and how could we? But when this thing first came out, I think Attention Is All You Need came out almost 7 years ago to the day. We're marking it's been a minute since that paper came out. And I remember that summer, we had one of our interns give us a paper read on this as like, hey, this is neat. This is something that we should know and be tracking. And I didn't understand 99% of it. Y'all did, but at the time, it just seemed like a new and interesting way to do language tasks. And then fast forward a year and a half, we had the NVIDIA release of the GAN model where we could do photorealistic image generation. And I remember very quickly that summer, we were at an AI conference and we did a demo, and we thought it'd be really neat to have someone take their picture and in real time change their appearance, put a smile on their face. And it was a hit. People loved it. But we're sitting back thinking, how do we use this stuff?
Right.
Maybe data augmentation, maybe photo editing. Had no idea it would be as profound as it was today.
Right. And to the extent that, you know, language models were even on the radar at that point, they were really not even close to production ready. And once we saw language models that could do, I would say, fairly impressive results, there were really open questions about how we might use it. You brought up synthesizing training data. That I thought was a really, really good approach. I had no idea we were going to see this monumental leap through scale. And there's a couple things. One is, I totally agree with this. Scott Aronson, the computer science professor, has said that he feels the large language model behavior that we're seeing, where as you just scale them up and you train them to do next token prediction, they have these incredible abilities. He considers it to be the biggest scientific discovery of his lifetime. Wow. I would totally agree with that perspective, because in my wildest dreams, I would not have imagined we'd get this type of behavior just by scaling up a language model. And language models, to be clear, are just simple software systems that are trained to correctly predict the next word, to keep it simple. And I think it's a real proof point of sort of these emergent abilities. And we're not even at the end of this yet. We don't know where or when we will see diminishing returns as we scale up these models. But I completely was blindsided by that personally.
Yeah, and then November 22, ChatGPT 3 comes out, and it marks the age of AI.
That's That's right.
And now today we are seeing AI budgets for the first time.
That's right.
And it really just set the industry off in ways that we just had no idea. And thankfully it did, because it's bringing a lot of attention to other forms of AI and the value of different, just good old fashioned narrow AI,
yeah,
predictive algorithms. So it's been a very, very positive thing. No idea where it's going next. Really excited to take this ride, but I'm just so happy that it's made it more accessible, more obvious, more approachable, and allows us to work on maybe other things, other interesting things.
Let me ask you one more question on the generative AI front. A lot of companies are thinking about getting into AI right now. And would you say it's fair to make the argument that most of them think ChatGPT is the full extent of their options? Or are people starting to wake up and realize there's just a much broader class of AI out there?
You know, that's such an interesting question. I would say most are seeing ChatGPT and saying, that's great. What can we do with artificial intelligence? What can we do with general artificial intelligence? Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with general artificial intelligence. But I think that traditional companies that are non-digital native, that are late to cloud or late to the digital age of having robust data sets, are seeing Gen AI as an entry point because it's so accessible. And I think it's a fabulous idea in terms of maybe we're not ready to do some sophisticated predictive algorithm, but we certainly can use it for enterprise search and see a ton of value doing that. Our document processing, gosh, we used to spend 6 months on document processing. You can do the same task in 6 seconds with some of these models today. It's absolutely wild. But so you see a little bit of both, but I think that the value is bringing attention to the wider capability and also providing an entry point for those that might not have the data.
Okay. All right. Let's keep on going with things that we maybe didn't get right. What's another one?
Oh gosh. I think early days, we were still very focused on providing engineering services and strategy services, but strategy services meant something very different to us at the time. We saw strategy as a workshop, and we saw strategy as this idea of a center of excellence. And that center of excellence was pretty static. It was a capsule. It was a little department that sat next to your IT department. It was your AI department, and they would build AI models, and they would manage AI software, and they would monitor things in production. And if the business had an AI problem, they'd bring it to their AI department, their little center of excellence. And while that's not necessarily an incorrect formulation, that's just one on a spectrum of correct formulations. There's almost not necessarily a template for a center of excellence. So instead, what we are seeing is the emphasis put in other areas when it comes to starting an AI organization or an organization inside yours that's dedicated to AI. One of which is this idea of the CDAO, the Chief Data and AI Officer. And this part was inspired by the Biden administration's executive order mandating that all federal agencies have this position. And the position does a couple of things that are super valuable. They are the figurehead of your AI operation. They are responsible to coming up with your strategy. They are accountable to the performance of the program. They want to mitigate your risks. They have to know a wide landscape of AI capability. They're looking for productivity enhancements. They're looking for revenue opportunities. So it's a wide mandate, but they are the individual that kind of builds out the entire program and owns responsibility for the program. So that becomes really important. I'm really interested from your perspective on when that happened, how is that landing for you? And when you are working with customers, if you were to advocate for a C-level AI person, what is the makeup of that person from your opinion? We know the administration's opinion, but what do you see as important?
I would argue that if you're going to be in charge of overseeing AI development, AI integration within the company, you need a few things. One, you've got to have, ideally you want somebody with real world production AI deployment experience, because there's kind of no substitution for having been there, done that. That is, at this moment in time, a little bit of a tall order, because there aren't that many people who have you know, meaningful world production experience deploying, building and deploying and managing AI systems. Another aspect, I really think you've got to have deep technical knowledge. You want somebody who actually understands the technology and doesn't rely upon necessarily just a surface understanding of what's going on. Because the reason I believe that is that there are misconceptions about AI. It's absolutely just software, but it's more complicated than traditional software for one real simple reason, which is most of the attention getting AI systems you see out in the world right now are deep learning based, which means they are machine learning systems that are trained on data. And that just adds a completely additional layer of complexity because you're dealing with data. The data could have errors in it. It could have bias in it. There are all kinds of ethical issues that come up, not to mention all the governance questions around privacy and things like that. So, having somebody with experience and deep technical knowledge and an understanding of those issues, I think, is really important. And then the last thing, I say this all the time, I really feel like the alignment question around modeling is sometimes overlooked by companies in a rush to get to production. And the classic example would be you're trying to build something and you don't take the time to go and look at the data and really understand whether there are anomalies or bias within that. Then you train a model and then you just perpetuate those biases in production. So somebody who knows what they're doing on all of those fronts is going to be invaluable in two things: getting systems actually into production, because like we've already talked about, prototypes are easy. And number two, having systems that are in production that are aligned and not perpetuating bias or negative bias in unethical ways.
And they just grow on trees.
They just grow on trees. They're everywhere these
days. Throw a rock, you'll hit one.
Yeah, exactly.
So the CDAO becomes a key area of focus. We're seeing a lot of people refocus on that figurehead. And then the other part is this idea of governance, which is kind of an amorphous but molding type of concept where we're starting to see formulation on what governance actually means. But if I were to simplify it, I think it's a policy, meaning here's how we're going to be using AI inside our organization. And most importantly, here's how we're not going to be using AI inside our organization. Could be a bunch of reasons, but that policy becomes really important. How are we going to stay compliant with the AI Act in the EU if you're regulated under that, or anticipating regulation? Policy becomes really important. But I think the other part beyond policy is having tools to be able to get models from idea to experiment to production and have oversight from end to end becomes really important. Being able to make sure that these models are behaving appropriately in production, right, and have mitigation techniques, right, if they aren't performing in production, to continue that feedback loop, continue to increase the capability of the model, becomes really important. So it's really, it's a process, it's an operation, and it's oversight to manage the risk and make sure you're actually getting the return on your value. And that process is becoming more and increasingly important and becoming more of an acceptable approach across the industry.
Yeah, totally agree. All right. I'm going to stop us there. I know you and I both have many more topics we're going to cover in the next episode, but that was fantastic. And hopefully people listening to this can learn from them some of the mistakes that we've made.
I hope so.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you for listening to Hidden Layers. This series is hosted by Kung Fu AI, a management consulting and engineering firm focused exclusively on artificial intelligence. If you have any questions or thoughts about today's episode, or if you know someone we should feature, please visit us at kungfu.ai.